This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 339. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Brandon, is that you? I know it's been a while since we talked, but also I'm just trying to look through the smoke and like see if I can see your face on the screen. Like, you're about 3 feet away. That's too far away to see right now through all the smoke. But yeah, I think it's you. It's you. Hey, man.
Yeah, man. We'll see how well, just how far I can make it through this with a voice without it going out, because not only not being able to see through the smoke, but just talking through it can be a challenge.
Yeah, the breathing has been a little difficult. Turns out when the entire western part of the country's on fire, it makes things a little more difficult.
Makes it a little bit harder. But it sounds like things are going pretty well over there on the West Coast. Maybe they're not getting the smoke as much, which is good news for our team, because training camp started and they can be outside and running around and hopefully not having to deal with the smoke.
Yeah. Well, I was in the Everett area last weekend and it was much more clear than it is here. So good. Hopefully that's good for the Hawks and the start of training camp. Hopefully we hear more good news come out of training camp, like Jamal Adams shows up and participates, things like that.
Oh, it's fine. Depending on what reports you hear that Jamal Adams is going to, the deal's going to get taken care of and it's going to be fine. But at the same time, you're hearing, oh, well, they're not even close. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Does the headlines regarding the Jamal Adams contract feel even more absurd now that the Aaron Rodgers saga has kind of played its course for this year? In terms of, I mean, just in the last 2 weeks or since we talked, it was, oh, he's set to retire. All the Vegas books have changed all of their odds. And like, Aaron is definitely not coming back. He's going to retire. And then half an hour later, you get another headline. Oh, no, like, it's he plans on being back. He plans on being back. And then 2 days after that, it's, oh, well, the contract is it's they've made a deal to be there for this year. And it seems just as absurd with this Jamal Adams stuff. I mean, Seahawks offer him to be the highest paid safety. Everything is looking good. Oh, now they're just light years apart and they're never going to get a deal done. And I mean, it's just the ridiculousness of it all. I mean, I have a feeling that this is closer to being done than not. It's definitely getting done. And it's really not one thing to worry about at all with Jamal Adams' contract.
It's going to happen. They got to get it worked out.
I mean, they gave up too damn much to not. And he's a hell of a player. In his prime. That's who you pay.
Well, some other guys who got paid, not with the Seahawks. Fred Warner, 5 years, $95 million. Noteworthy because he is now the highest paid linebacker ahead of Bobby Wagner.
Yeah. Keep getting them checks, Fred. Good for him. How long has it been since Wag signed his deal? Is it 2 years? It's something along those lines. But long story short is Wags was able to be the top paid linebacker in the game for at least a couple of years. A lot of these contracts get leapfrogged in a week, so it was impressive that, Wags was able to be the highest paid linebacker for a good long time.
Oh, he still has one more. And he's got 2 years left. He's got 2021 and 2022.
There you go. So, I mean, I think if you're Bobby Wagner, you're probably not upset about it because, I mean, your deal was the market setting deal for longer than most.
Yeah. And he gets a pay bump next year too. So it's not like he's going to be hurting. I think he's all right.
I would hope so.
Only thing that you have to wonder about is I don't think they're going to end up paying Jamal Adams more than Bobby Wagner. And if they did, that might create somewhat of an issue, but I just don't see Adams going for more than $18 million a year.
Well, I'm sure what Adams' agent is doing is a lot like, remember when Jimmy Graham, when he was with the Saints, got into that big contract tiff and he was trying to get paid like a wide receiver one instead of a tight end? Uh-huh. I have a feeling that Adams' agent is like, yeah, he's a safety, but I mean, really he's an edge rusher and he should be paid like one of those guys.
good luck with that. We saw that that did not work out for Jimmy Graham all that well. So
no, and it's not what's going to happen here either. But that would be.
But you, that's as agent, an I mean, agent, sure that's it's your job to try that.
Yeah, and that's my guess is when they say, well, they're not even close to a deal. It has something to do with, you know, rumors about things like that. You know, where it's like, well, yeah, if that's if that's what you're talking about, then sure, they're probably not close to a deal, but everybody knows that's absurd.
Well, we are going to get into our Know Your Rivals series starting this week. Going to be talking about the Rams. But do we want to do jail and arrest watch first, or do we want to talk Rams first?
No, jail and arrest watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Richard Sherman probably made the biggest headlines in the last 2 weeks. And he was booked in Seattle on a charge of burglary, domestic violence, which when you hear that, it sounds really bad.
Yeah.
It's not that it wasn't serious. It's just that it wasn't as bad as that initial. When you heard that booking, you're thinking, oh, my gosh, you know, is somebody getting beat up? And none of that happened. Everybody is OK, it seems, physically. But I'm worried. My concerns went from the Sherman family to Sherman himself as I kind of watched all of this play out. It's probably a good thing that we didn't have a show like on the day that it happened, because so much changed that first day to when the details started to come out in the following days.
Right. And when you do hear the charge of domestic violence like that, you go, oh, just like you thought, oh, man, there's some physicality that happened here. You know, maybe somebody was hurt. And I mean, you had Sherman's wife come out and be like, look, nobody was hurt here. Like, that's not what we were really concerned about. And you hear her call to the cops too. And, she's not her main concern, because they were like, oh, somebody called the cops on Sherman when he went to break into a family member's house. Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, geez. Like, you thought maybe the people inside the house had called, or who knows exactly how it went down. But you know, her call, her number one concern was he's belligerent right now, you know, really angry, and like, just don't shoot him.
Right.
Right. Like, that's her number one concern in that call was his safety.
I need help, but don't hurt him.
Right. Yeah. You know, less concerned about, you know, her, it sounds like it was her parents' place.
Yeah. It was. So what happened was apparently he crashed his car into a median. He was reportedly driving under the influence and was not. And so he parked his car, and then it must have been close to her folks' house. According to his wife, she told the dispatcher that she thought that he, and this is according to an article that the Seattle Times did, that Sherman followed her to the house, and that he was suffering through some depression. He was on antidepressants, and she said he had been drinking. So that was, and so he was there to talk to her. And I haven't listened to the call, actually, so maybe you heard more of the information through that. Personally, I can't listen to 911 calls because they disturb me.
Yeah, I mean, it was one that you, when you're hearing it, you're like, oh, Jesus, this isn't good. But, and then you see the doorbell video of Sherman, you know, smashing on the door.
Yeah.
But I think this is one of those instances. I mean, somebody once told me a long time ago, very smart person, nobody knows what goes on between two people, oftentimes not even those two people. And, you know, for us to judge what is actually going on in this situation, I think is totally out of bounds. I mean, I don't know what the actual circumstances were to bring him to that point, but it does sound like, you know, you start mixing some prescription drugs with some booze, and that can definitely make you act in a way that maybe you wouldn't. You know, it sounds like the family is more interested in working this out amongst them, in that this is more of a one-off than a pattern of behavior that you would need to worry about.
This was one thing I thought was interesting in the article from the Seattle Times. It said, after police worked to de-escalate the situation, Sherman shoved several of the officers, broke free, and ran toward the patrol sergeant's position, according to his statement. I found myself squared up with him as I attempted to gain control of his body to effect an arrest. I performed a double leg takedown to bring Sherman briefly off his feet to where he was now sitting on the ground. Several officers struggled to get Sherman into handcuffs, and a police dog bit him on his left ankle during the struggle. But once handcuffed, Sherman's mood seemed to lighten, and he even joked around with us about the merits of my takedown form and eventually admitted it wasn't bad. He was still occasionally agitated, particularly about the canine use, but he was overall more jovial than before.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that. We'll see what happens going forward. I think this is one of those things where, like I said before, it definitely more of a one-off. The one thing you heard on all the talking head networks, right, in when they were talking about the story, was the line, "This is out of character. This is out of character." You heard it over and over and over again. And it does feel out of character for Sherman. If you would have asked me out of all of the members of the original LOB, you know, Browner, Sherm, Cam, and Earl, like the guy that I thought was least likely to ever be in a position like this, I would have bet everything I owned on Sherman.
I think.
And it turns out it's Cam.
It's Cam. That's where I would have put my money.
And I think this sort of event for Sherman is definitely going to be a wake up call for himself, and they'll start figuring some things out that, you know, can be helpful for him going forward. And I have nothing but high hopes that this is all going to be something that's turned around and we look at in 10 years and everybody goes, "Wow, that was just one of those really weird nights."
Yeah. One of the worst. And that's part of the reason why I couldn't bring myself to listen to the 911 call is that I just can't, the idea of listening to someone in one of their worst moments, because when you call 911, mm-hmm. you're in a pretty bad place. And that's not, I can't bring myself to listen.
And you don't need to. I mean, I think we know everything that I wouldn't even say need to know. We don't really need to know anything about this. This is a family matter, but the amount of information that we have is more than enough, and they can all work through it appropriately together. And I'm sure they will. Now the question becomes, does Sherman even play football this year at this point?
Well, it has to be, he has to be ready for it, right? It's really the idea of him getting through this part of it. And, you know, he's talked about trying to get the help that he needs. And so if that's part of it, but gosh, I could also see Pete Carroll being the type of coach that if football and structure is something that he needs, then Seattle could be a good place for him. I mean, not just because that he lives in the area, obviously, but because, you know, there's relationships there.
Well, there's a lot of things that still make sense here. And that is, it's a position of need. I mean, he's still a baller. I mean, maybe not the same level that he was at the peak of his powers, but a guy that we could very much use. And then it is a familiar situation for him. And maybe that would be helpful. I don't know. I mean, that's up to him, clearly. Can I tell you one petty thing that came out of this for me that's so petty? And I was annoyed by it. And for no reason, I shouldn't be at all. But I was.
Uh-huh.
John Lynch comes out and says something along the lines of how the 49ers are there to support and help Sherman in with whatever he needs and blah, 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 blah. And which that's all the things he should say. And I'm, you know, genuinely, I'm glad that that's the approach that that organization would take. But my pettiness on the inside was like, hands off, dude. He's not even on your team anymore. He's ours. He's a Seahawk. Okay. Like, if anybody's going to reach out and help take care of Sherm right now and make sure that everything goes the way that it needs to going forward, that's for us to do. You guys stay down there in the Bay Area. I had that petty feeling rise up, you know, inside me.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
So that's like,
I was mad at John Lynch for offering support. That's how much I hate the 49ers.
That is some hardcore sports hate right there, because say something like that happened with Jerry Rice, you know, the year after he left the Seahawks, and Holmgren were to come out and say something like that. You think the 49ers fan reaction would have been something similar to your reaction?
I would think so, but maybe not, because they're not real fans of any real team. So maybe they wouldn't have the kind of care that I do.
Maybe.
Or the rest of the 12s. Yeah,
that might be true.
I when I had that thought, it was a flash, right? Just like through my head. And I felt a little ashamed, a little on the right side of history with that. And then also I did know that that was probably the wrong thing to think. Yeah.
Well, in other arrest / jail watch, former Seahawks linebacker Michael Kendricks is going to jail. So not a good offseason for former Seahawks, but one day he just gets one day in jail for Michael Kendricks.
Is this over the trading stuff?
Yeah.
Wow. That's finally just buffing out.
It's finally happening. Michael Kendricks was a Seahawks linebacker 15 years ago, and now they're getting around to it.
Well, yeah, that saga seemed to drag out forever. And I mean, I'm glad he's only getting one day because I think the charges are kind of ridiculous. And yeah, that seems fair.
Well, one thing that I thought that Jake in Seattle in our Facebook group Ring of Honor pointed out, that it must have been a mandatory jail, like there must have been some kind of mandatory jail time within the sentencing provisions to only get one day, because otherwise why one day? Like, why go through all that process of having to square it all away one day later? I don't know. It seems weird.
I don't know. The people that are like rule followers to the, you know, crossing of every T, the dotting of every I, and love rules for the sake of rules, I don't understand them. And I have a feeling that that's exactly what happened here. You're 100% right. So yeah, I don't know why you'd ever go through that. It just seems absurd, but fine.
Well, that's done. That'll be good for him to have all that behind him at least.
Yeah, no, I'm happy for the guy.
Yeah, a lot of linebacker news. So,
yeah, the linebacker news that I've been waiting to hear is not in the news. Where is KJ?
Where is KJ?
Bring him back.
That is the question. And he was on a podcast recently, and he at least made it sound like it could potentially happen during training camp.
Yes, that there is a chance. There is a chance, and I'm not closing the door in Seattle. Going into free agency, I thought it'd be a no-brainer, but they're going to wait till training camp, so we'll see. No matter what happens, my career in Seattle was just unforgettable. Just 10 years, just had a lot of fun. Got a Super Bowl, got a Pro Bowl, Seahawks Man of the Year. I did a lot of good stuff in that jersey, and so hopefully one day they put me up in the Ring of Honor. We'll see, but. Yeah, no matter what happened, just playing with Bobby and, you know, the Legion of Boom, those guys, that's going to be historical. And I'm just thankful that I could be a part of it. So we'll see. If I go back to Seattle, that'd be nice. If not, you know, I'm forever thankful.
Well, I'll just make KJ a deal. This is real simple.
Okay.
All right. We'll put you in the Ring of Honor for sure if you just come back for another year.
Yeah. And there is no chance at the Ring of Honor, KJ, if you go to a place like the Rams.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's, you know, any of the Foraka. If you go to any one of the evil divisional teams, then yeah, you're out.
I could get over the Cardinals, but definitely not. The other two would hurt, yeah.
I don't know. I still hate them too.
With Sherman, like, is there any chance that he gets Ring of Honor?
Oh, 100%.
He went to the Niners.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so you're even over that. So, gosh, KJ, you're in.
I know, but I just wanted to put a little extra pressure on KJ in this moment right now. I know it's a double standard and I don't really care. The hypocrisy I'm fine with.
Okay. Well, come back, KJ. I hope that, you know, this is, now that training camp started, this is like hold your breath and cross your fingers for no injury type season. This is one of my least favorite times because you're excited about football, but there's almost nothing good that can happen between now and week one of the regular season, other than, you know, maybe a big trade that that makes you even more excited. But so often it's like, there's all that potential for injury.
There is, but you also have to look at it in a light too. And that the coaches, I think, look at it in, and that is when the players are back in the facility and with the team. And so it does eliminate some of the rando variables of guys just running around during the offseason doing their thing, right?
That's true. Well, there's more focus with that. Yeah, the focus is now on football rather than focusing on just trying to
all the personal life stuff they do.
Yeah, right.
So there's a chance here that maybe this is for the better, Brandon. I don't know. Maybe have a more positive outlook, Debbie Downer.
Well, the thing is I look over at the Rams and I see Cam Akers going out for the season with an Achilles tear. And yeah. I look at that and I go, oh, man, that is, you know, you don't want that to happen. You know, you've got to say all the right things because you don't want that to happen to your team. So I feel like it's kind of a jerk move if you celebrate that.
Yeah, hey, I definitely don't celebrate any guy getting injured, especially when it ends their year. I'd rather compete at full roster strength, no doubt.
I would rather the Rams not have Aaron Donald, but I don't want to jinx that and celebrate it and have one of our good people go down. What I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, so this is how my sports hate works with the injury thing. I would much rather that Aaron Donald be 100% tip-top healthy and just suddenly suck. Like, you know, and everything else in his life go really well, like his personal relationships and his family and his money and everything. Like, I hope forever all that works out really well for him. I hope his health stays tip-top, 100%. I just hope he suddenly sucks. And so, like, that's how I felt about the Cam Akers thing, too. I was like, well, you know, I guess if you were to have one of those catastrophic injuries to a player on your team, I guess it's best that it happens to a guy who's really a league average replacement player. So like you can literally plug in anybody else and have more Cam Akers.
I was talking to Rich Hammond from The Athletic about the Rams. And even before the Cam Akers injury news, there's question about not just with the durability of the running backs on that Rams roster, but the quality. And for Akers to go down, I think those questions are just even going to be amplified.
In the Akers hype train this offseason had been a little out of control.
A little bit. But I mean, he did have the injury that he worked through last year. And then he had such a good stretch of games that I think I could see why Rams fans would be excited and just jumping on that hype train.
Sure. He Emmitt Smith the hell out of last season.
I was surprised at how good that offensive line was for the Rams last year.
There we go. If you want to be, you know, really honest about it, that offensive line performed much better than I thought it would by a lot. And those guys deserve the credit for what Cam Akers was really able to do. Their offensive line was much improved last year compared to the year previous.
Can they do that again this year? Can the offense? And I suppose
they had a couple moving pieces again this year, correct?
Right. Like they're moving Corbett from guard to center because they lost their center to Kansas City.
Yeah.
Although they didn't make all that big of a move to try and keep Blythe in L.A.
No, they didn't. And then who they got at guard then? See, now that I'm doing this from the cabin, I have to do the recording over the tablet. And so I can't look stuff up as we go. Uh-huh. So I got to try to remember this stuff off the top of my head. So this is going to be really fun as we do these Know Your Rivals previews, because I just have to try to remember everything. And no, I wasn't going to do research before I came up.
You weren't just going to memorize the Rams roster going into this?
The changes on the Rams roster this last year?
Yeah. See, I was thinking that they were going to move Noteboom into guard, but looking at the unofficial depth chart at the Rams website, they have David Edwards at left guard. Oh, this is old because they have Austin Blythe at center still. Come on, Rams, okay. Update your dang website.
I guess when you really only have about 7 fans in the entire nation, then you really don't have to keep up on your website because nobody really cares.
Nobody cares. It's fine.
Yeah. No, the only person that really cares is probably Peter Schrager, right?
The Flying Coach podcast, it's brought some gold, Adam, I think, particularly to this show. I'm excited to bring this, but yes, this is just not a very good time for depth charts because with the preseason not starting, they still have, okay, David Edwards at left guard. They have Brian Allen at center and Austin Corbett at right guard. But I think they're putting Corbett at center. This middle of the offensive line is going to have questions to me.
Well, yeah, if we can't even figure out what the plan might be, like at this point, like that seems like a Tom Cable kind of year, right, for the Rams on offensive line. This is why when we talk about the Rams in this preview here in the national hype around the Rams yet again this year, coming off of last year, I have a hard time seeing these lofty projections that everybody else does. There's just too many changes. Too many changes.
John Johnson gone on the back end of that defense. You got Jordan Fuller, their other safety. And you still on the outside at corner, you got Darius Williams along with Jalen Ramsey. So it's the depth, really.
Did they lose a couple dudes off the D-line as well?
They did, yeah. They traded the one defensive lineman, you know, after he talked about how great it was that the Rams were moving on from Jared Goff, and then they traded him to Detroit.
What? I didn't even know that. That's hilarious.
Yeah, wow. It was Michael Brockers.
Was that spiteful? Was that a less need spite trade?
I don't know. That was
it. How do you think that conversation went when he showed up in Detroit?
When he showed, apparently.
What's up, Jared?
Yeah. Yeah, well, the quote was that he was that the Rams had leveled up by moving on from Jared Goff to go to Matt Stafford. And then, yeah, Michael Brockers gets traded to the Lions after that. And then he apologized to Goff.
There you go. That'd be about the only way he could do that. I mean, he's not wrong.
That's the line that you have to walk in the offseason. And Sean McVay ran into it when he was talking in one of the press conferences this offseason, when he was saying, oh, people have been asking me, you know, why my mood is so much better this year than it was in previous seasons. And man, I'm fired up to have Matt Stafford as our quarterback. And so everybody, of course, read into that appropriately, that, you know, he was so much more happy because Jared Goff was gone. And then they went with the stories it kind of in that regard. And he had to hold a separate press conference saying that, oh, no, that's not what I meant. It was no disrespect to Jared. It was just me being excited for our new quarterback.
Yeah, which is probably exactly how he felt. And that's fine. I people blew that out way out of proportion. It's like, what? McVay's not supposed to be excited about moving on from Jared Goff? Like, and then act all butthurt that, like, he might be like, yeah, he wasn't great for us the last couple of years, and I think we got better.
I thought the story was handled appropriately. Like, of course he's excited for exactly the reasons why he said. And McVay just made it, he amplified the story by coming out and saying that, like, having to reemphasize that he wasn't trying to put down his former quarterback.
Do you think McVay is in such a good mood because of his new bromance with Stafford or with Schrager? Like, which one do you think brings him more joy in his life?
Like I said before, there's one good thing about this Flying Coach podcast with him and Schrager is that we have so many more reasons to have that sports hatred for Sean McVay after listening to him and Schrager chop it up every single week this offseason.
Oh, yeah.
I've got eight reasons, Adam, why we should hate Sean McVay.
Brandon Schultz, it's list season. Look at you. I love it.
It's list season. It's know your rival season. They have all come together into this moment right here. Let's start with our first reason to hate Sean McVay. Number one, he's indecisive. He can't even decide on his favorite coach to hang out with, even though one of the coaches is supposedly one of his best friends.
I do use probably too much gel, but you know what? Consistency is the truest measurement of
performance. Leave that in. That's funny. That's not the clip.
It doesn't matter because he's not wrong. He does use too much gel.
He does use.
He's basically a Q-tip dipped in Vaseline. You light him on fire, and he would be the human torch. He wouldn't go out for 3 weeks.
Okay, let's start. See, this really should be the number one reason, is that he uses way too much hair product.
I do use probably too much gel, but you know what? Consistency is the truest measurement of performance, as we like to say. I'm consistently throwing about half of my gel in my hair, and I'm going through a lot of bottles every week.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, look at him. Look, Sean McVay, here's another reason why you should sports hate him. He's killing the planet with all his petroleum use and his hair. He's putting dead dinosaur juice in his hair by the bottle every stinking day. Like, it's unbelievable.
You want to know why the gas prices are going up this summer? It's because all the petroleum going into Sean McVay's hair on a daily basis.
That's right. And a little known fact, it takes more effort to refine Sean McVay's hair gel than it does gasoline.
It's true.
It's a true fact. Don't look it up.
So yes, as I was saying, he's indecisive. And because Schrager asked him who his favorite coach is, like if he could pick a guy in the NFL to hang out with and party, like who would he go with? And he can't come up with an answer.
Matt LaFleur is one of my best friends. So I'm going to say, you know, you'd love to be able to go with Matt, but, you know, Kingsbury's close by. I mean, there's a lot of guys that you know, you're putting me in a spot that, you know, it just depends on what type of atmosphere we're looking for. I got a defensive coordinator in Raheem Morris that's about as much fun to be around as anybody. We all know how dynamic Mike Tomlin is. I mean, we got a lot of potential options. This is like you can't go wrong, Peter. Okay. You can't go wrong with that one.
And I had to cut him off because he went on to talk about Belichick. And how do you, as a person, start off by reminding everyone that one of your best friends is a head coach in the NFL, and then you can't even decide on hanging out with your best friend?
Yeah, I mean, in at the very least, you could do the thing where if he doesn't want to make a decision, he can just be like, well, I love me and my frat boy coaches, so let's just have a fishing trip, me, LaFleur, and Kingsbury, and we'll drink Coronas and listen to Yacht Rock and just do that.
That's not his drink of choice. We will, I think, in one of these clips has his drink of choice. I didn't list it as one of the reasons to sports hate him, but I think
I like
that,
this list already. This has been fun.
I don't think McVay is a beer this. Drinker.
No. Yeah, he's probably a pinky out kind of guy.
Oh, it's this next one. It's because I want to point out that not only is he a bad friend with regard of not picking his friends to hang out with, when he does hang out with his friends, like a dinner with Cliff Kingsbury and Patrick Mahomes, he sets up his friend in a really bad way. He's just a bad friend.
He's so confident about it. So we get a couple vodkas in, and I decide to, I say, hey, send me the text. And so I had put my friend's phone number in my phone as Roger Goodell. So he texts me, hey, you know better than this. You and Kingsbury are both in deep trouble, all right, for tampering. And so I just show the screenshot to Cliff, okay? And I told him, I said, hey, man, he never texts me. You better get on the phone with Steve Keim and Mr. Bidwell right now, because I think we're both losing picks.
That was mildly funny. I'll give him some credit there. To kind of do your buddy dirty just a little bit like that. But
you have to remember that Kingsbury, he was a brand new head coach. They were going out to dinner with Mahomes, apparently, and it was before the draft, but Kingsbury had coached Mahomes, so they had cleared this, I guess, through the NFL to make sure it was cool. And he does this, and I guess it wasn't, he copped to it pretty early rather than like allowing Kingsbury to actually call his bosses and stuff, because that would have really been bad.
Right. But.
Okay, yeah, mildly funny. Okay, you're right. It's mildly funny.
But the kind of more hilarious part about all of this is that he's doing the Belichick to Kingsbury. Like, remember that season leading up to when they lost miserably in the Super Bowl?
Right.
Where Belichick got in his head and was texting him and, you know, was having conversations and all of that. See, this is how you know McVay learned nothing from that. He did it wrong. He didn't just get all buddy-buddy with Kingsbury and build him up so he could like thump him down later. He just tries to pull a prank on him and missed a big window of opportunity there. He learned nothing.
Well, I'm starting to question whether or not he's actually this brilliant football mind that everybody talks about. Because what is it with Sean McVay? Everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's one of the smartest young coaches. The problem is that he's actually confessing on the show how he's someone with no original ideas on calling plays. Here he is talking to new Falcons head coach Arthur Smith, admitting how he's always looking for ways to copy other coaches.
I'll tell you what, you talk about best offensive mind, one of the best. I mean, what he did in Tennessee these last couple of years, he has been lighting it up, been seeing their stuff. I've been copying his catfish for the last couple of years, man. It's been awesome watching him do his thing.
Sean McVay, cheater.
Cheater, cheater. Yeah. And everybody gets mad at Pete, right? Pete's stuck in his ways. He does to do it Pete's way. At least Pete's original.
Yeah.
He's his own kind of cat, man. A two-packer.
Straight pink. You know that? Straight pink four-packer.
Straight pink four-packer. And McVay, you know, he can't hang with that. But there is some truth in that, right? I mean, we all call this a copycat league. I mean, it's something that happens all over the place. And you look at...
We need to just move right along. Sean McVay is a cheater and can't come up with his own original plays.
You're right. Exactly.
Moving on.
What a dunce.
You're trying to make people justify what he's doing, and don't.
You're right. I screwed that up. I don't know what I'm doing.
So this next part, I don't think you're going to be able to turn this one on its head, Adam. Sean McVay on the show shares a story about how he's trying to get to the ESPYs. He hasn't been to the ESPYs before. He's super excited, but the amount of entitlement that he shows, it shows the type of disrespect that he has for other people. Let's start with the road workers.
All right. So it starts out, you know, they had like decided they're going to pave our roads. So we're trying to get out to get going. And they're like, you can't go anywhere. You know, this road is blocked. I said, no, it's not. Get the hell out of my way.
Number one.
Yeah. I could kind of relate. Get really mad at the road construction guys.
He has no respect for police officers just trying to do their job.
Next thing you know, I hear this freaking siren buzzing up to me on a moped, okay? It's this this cop that wants to be the hero, okay? He gives me a jaywalking ticket, all right? I got TMZ, I got like local media looking like, oh my gosh, Coach McVay already getting in trouble, you know? So I'm like, come on, man, is this the time to really be a hero? So he gives us both jaywalking tickets, okay?
So yeah, lawbreaker and no respect for the cops.
That's right. I think that's one there that there is no defense for. I mean, why? How can you be upset over a jaywalking ticket? What? It's $7. Like, what's the problem here?
Yeah. Well, it was slowing him down. He had to try and get to the red carpet for the ESPYs.
Whatever, dude. Use a crosswalk like the rest of us.
Exactly. Trying to be a hero.
Yeah. Oh, that painting it that way too. Oh, here comes this cop just doing his job, trying to protect and serve. Wants to be a hero. No, I don't think he had heroic thoughts in his mind as he writes a jaywalking ticket. I don't think he put on his cape and then wrote Sean McVay a jaywalking ticket and then flew off on his moped back to the moped police bat cave and thought of himself as a hero for the day.
So I was saving one of the hair product ones for last. This one's going to have to be the last one. Sean McVay has no idea where he personally ranks in terms of all-time Sean's. When you think of the greatest Sean's of all time, Adam, what are some of the names that come to mind? And you can even stick to the NFL.
You got to start with Sean Payton if you're thinking NFL, right? Like, I mean, because he actually comes up with plays on his own.
Has won a Super Bowl.
He's
definitely scored more than 3 points in a Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. He's been successful that way. I would also go with... Shaun of the Dead from that movie.
We can go outside of the football world because, yes, he does have this ranking list that McVay has put together, or at least is jumping in on, does go outside the football world.
Not a great list of great Shauns, right? Like
Sean Alexander, you got the Seahawks legendary running back.
Yeah, I'd put him above McVay, of course, every time for life. If your name's Sean, maybe there's just a ceiling. You can only be so great.
And there's Sean the Sheep.
Oh, how did I forget about Sean the Sheep? Like, yeah, he might be, if the Mount Rushmore of Sean's was to be constructed tomorrow, he's the first face carved in, isn't he? Sean the Sheep.
Yeah, and I think McVay would agree.
Second most impressive Sean. Second one. Sean the Sheep is definitely number one.
Sean McVay says he is the second most impressive Sean.
Yeah, well, he's definitely overestimating his Sean-ness and where he ranks in the pantheon of Sean's. And, I mean, just hair gel alone has to knock him to at least, 4,000th? Somewhere in there? Of all the greatest Sean's?
At least.
Number two. Get out of here, Sean.
I'm starting to sense that maybe you kind of like Sean McVay after listening to all those clips.
No, I definitely do not like Sean McVay.
He meant his favorite drink. He mentioned the vodka and having that with Kingsbury at the dinner. Mm. And then in another part of the podcast, I didn't clip it, but he talks about drinking vodka Red Bulls. So
Oh, see, this whole time I've been screwing up for years here, Brandon. I didn't realize it till just now. I've been calling Kingsbury and him and LaFleur, you know, frat boy coaches. Mm-hmm. I screwed it up. They're sorority girl coaches. Like, if they've been drinking vodka and Red Bulls, they're clearly sorority girls.
I think that that's a frat boy drink too now.
Well, I guess. I mean, maybe in this day and age, he probably puts on his skinny jeans, gels up his hair, and pours himself some vodka Red Bull and watches some Sex in the City or something. Has himself a nice little night.
Sex in the City, it might be a good show. I've heard it's good.
I was married when that show came out, and so therefore I watched some of it. It's mediocre.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let's get back to talking football, because what else can we talk about with the Rams? We've had our arguments this offseason of where Matt Stafford belongs in terms of his place, of where he should be thought of as an NFL mm-hmm. quarterback. And I guess I have a question for you, because as for a guy who refers to Matt Ryan as Matty Mediocre, I think you have your Matts confused. How is Matt Stafford not Matty Mediocre?
Because he's like seven times better. I mean, he really is. Now, with that said, I've given this a lot of thought since we've had this conversation a few times. We've argued about it on the Ring of Honor a little bit amongst ourselves. Here's where I think I actually come down on Stafford. He is a very talented quarterback, and he has far more talent than Matt Ryan. I mean, he can actually move a little bit. He can improvise. He can do some of that stuff. He's got a way better arm. Accuracy is probably pretty similar. I think Stafford is an upper tier quarterback when it comes to just the raw physical traits,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Now, the places where Stafford really falls short, number one, I mean, we all have talked about it, is injuries. I mean, for sure, it's injuries. He's always hurt or dinged up.
I'd say he's always hurt, but he's rarely injured to the point of missing games.
Yeah, hurt, maybe not injured, because hurt is being dinged up, but still being able to play at a regular level.
Yeah, he's always got these little weird things like broken fingers or hurt shoulders or, yeah.
Well, last year was the back, right? The other thing that, and I think this is probably where I found myself disagreeing with everybody over Matt Stafford's talent was, I think where I was misevaluating something was just in the clutchiness part of it. And we get to find out this year, for sure, without question, whether not being able to get over the hump in the games that really matter is a Stafford problem or a team problem. And I mean, at this point with his history, I think you have to say that, you know, it's definitely feels like a Stafford problem. So this year where he's in LA under this microscope, being anointed as the savior of the LA Rams and going to take them to the promised land in the next year or two. And they gave up the farm for him. There's a lot of pressure on Stafford this year, seeing how he performs, not in week four against, you know, the Jaguars or whoever it is, you know, some lesser team. Mm-hmm. But when you get down towards the end of the season, when the games really seem to have more meaning, whether it's in seeding or even making the playoffs or whatever it is, or even in the playoffs, I have a feeling he's going to wilt then.
You know, Stafford did have one really good year where I remember him being clutch time after time. And I want to say it was the Jim Caldwell, one of the Jim Caldwell seasons.
Yeah, it was Caldwell. And then Jim Bob Cooter was his offensive coordinator at that time.
Yeah. So he did have one year where the clutchiness factor was there.
Well, he got help from the Cooter and that made him a lot better for that one season. Uh-huh. And I don't know that that's what's going to be duplicated here with the Rams, especially with they do have so many moving pieces. Especially with Akers going out, you know, once again, there's another blow to their overall roster. They're not nearly as deep this year.
Does Matt Stafford jinx running backs? Is that like part of his dynamic?
That might be it. Yeah, he might have the CJ Procise touch when it comes to running backs. Like everybody's around just gets injured and himself as well.
That's really weird. I was looking at Football Outsiders. They released the top 10, because it's list season, top 10 anti-dynasty teams. And Number 10 on the list, spanning 15 seasons, the Detroit Lions. So there's your quarterback of one of the most anti-dynasty teams in NFL history, Matt Stafford.
I still believe, I don't care if you put a clone of Mahomes and John Elway like in one body and threw him in that situation, that he'd have any more success.
The crazy thing is, though, looking at these top 10 teams, really they're the bottom 10 teams, he was the only guy who was a consistent quarterback over the years on these teams. And that's wild to me that you can have a consistent quarterback that is allegedly good, but yet have that bad of a team over that long of a time span. Because one of the things, the reason why I clicked on this article was I thought, oh, I wonder if the early 90s era Seahawks were on this list at all, because they were just notoriously bad, especially that 92 team. Apart from, I mean, the defense was really good in 92, obviously, with Cortez Kennedy and getting defensive player of the year, but that offense was so bad. But this is looking at it from a dynastic point of view. Like, you have to be sure, bad for many years. And after Chuck Knox left, really, there's that time span between where Chuck Knox left the Seahawks and where Mike Holmgren came on. So it's almost a 10-year span. But even as bad as some of those years were, it was only good enough for even an honorable mention on this list.
Yeah, there you go. So even when we're at our worst, we're not among the worst. The top of the list, it had to be either Browns or Cards, yeah?
1999 to 2019, Cleveland Browns, number one.
And number two?
Number two, the Cardinals. So hey, there you go.
Yeah. See, in my gut, I knew what it was.
It's the 1985 to 2006 Cardinals specifically.
Yeah, like 20 years of Cardinals.
That's 21 years.
Yeah.
Then you got the Bucks from 83 to 96 at number three.
That's not entirely fair. Well, wait, 83 was after they went to the playoffs with Doug Williams. Okay. All right. That's fine.
Oh, did they have Doug Williams before he went to Washington?
Oh, yeah. That's where Doug Williams started his career, was in Tampa.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you start getting into some of the old time teams, like they have the 1926 to 1945 Chicago Cardinals. So there you go. The Cardinals are on here twice.
God, they were a puddle of suck. If you had to watch them, it was the worst thing in the world. I mean, you're thinking about 3 yards in a cloud of dust. It was 6 inches in a cloud of dust. George Halas didn't know what the hell he was doing. They were terrible.
Is that a George Halas coach team?
I just figure anything that's old and Bears happened under George Halas.
No, I think that might even predated George Halas.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't know.
George Halas was around when we were climbing out of the primordial ooze, man.
I don't see his name on here associated with this team.
Well, that's somebody who's a Bears fan then. Trying to bury the truth. Which is a lot what the national media is trying to do with this Rams team this year. Trying to bury the truth. Like, nobody talks about them losing their defensive coordinator, who made a huge turn with that defense coming from Wade Phillips in his last year there. And they have a tremendous uptick. And then he gets hired to be the Chargers head coach. And everybody's like, oh, it'll be fine.
Yeah, they got McVay.
Right. Who, he steals all his plays on offense from everybody else. And I don't think he's a defensive coach. So he probably just like goes out there and he's like, Aaron, just go out there and screw up the play this play. That's their entire defense. But I think that brain drain is a big deal. And it's something that's not talked about a lot in the NFL from year to year with successful teams. And I just think that that's a much bigger blow than anybody is giving credit for.
Well, it does put a target on Raheem Morris taking over defensive coordinator, because a lot of times you see variability with defensive teams anyway. Like, it's very tough to have consistency year after year with defensive teams. Yeah, you have Aaron Donald, you have the top defensive lineman, you have the top outside corner with Jalen Ramsey. I see why it's easy for people to say, oh, well, they're just going to continue to be good because they have those guys. But there's a lot more that goes into it. And yeah, whether or not Raheem Morris is going to be able to maintain even close to that consistency that they had last year, it's going to be tough.
It's statistically unlikely. And I just don't really see a path to that. Now, the average fan, we do. We look at things and we go, hey, oh, big names there. Like, you know, you got Ramsey and Donald and oh my, you know, it's like Lions, Tigers and Bears. Oh my. And, but you don't really look all the way down the roster. And I mean, do you think Floyd's really going to have another huge year? I don't think so. I mean, that's a guy who chronically overperformed or underperformed when he was with the Bears. And he comes in and he has a decent year last year playing alongside Aaron Donald and
because they had the Brockers and Donald. And that's why I think Floyd, it helped him tremendously to have those guys. And then so now I think anytime you're going to have to focus at least a double team on Donald, it's going to make it easier for guys like Floyd. So I don't know if I could see him having quite the season that he did last year, but I could still see him having some success.
Maybe a little. It's a lot like when the Niners got rid of Buckner last year and everybody's like, oh, they're still going to be great and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, well, you know, that's a big piece.
Yeah.
And you don't have that same depth that you did before. I think between the lack of depth and the lack of coaching on the defensive side of the ball, they will take a significant step back. And just as you mentioned, the unlikeliness of stringing together dominant years on defense back to back to back over the course of NFL history. It just doesn't happen very often. And I don't think this is the type of team to do that. And then you factor in that the Niners are going to be better this year because of just injury luck. I mean, just right there.
Right.
And Garoppolo, you know, kind of playing for his NFL life right now. They're going to be better. The Rams to me are clearly the third place team in this division this year. They'll probably go 8-9. And maybe make squeak in the playoffs, but they're not going to be better than last year. And they were a fringe team last year anyways.
Yeah. If they go 8-9, I don't think they make the playoffs, but there might be a 9-8 team that gets in. So I suppose they're right in that neighborhood if they're able to win 9 games. But when it comes to injuries, I think the Rams are going to have the toughest time if they have anybody at that top level, because their amount of depth to me is questionable. I mean, at receiver, yeah, you say, oh, Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, you know, three good guys. But after that, you're talking about DeSean Jackson, who has been hurt historically. And dudes, I don't even know.
And he's 97 years old.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about something that maybe we should. And I feel like we're a little derelict on duty for not bringing up to this point. I mean, they did lose Gerald Everett as well in free agency, and they still have Higbee, sure. But what really made Higbee effective was Everett drawing all those coverages, a guy who's a supreme athlete for a tight end, right? Mm-hmm. And a very good pass catcher. I mean, that's a big get for the Seahawks to take him away from a rival and then add it to your own roster. I think that's going to be a big piece as well that they're going to miss.
Yeah. You're not a big Johnny Munt guy.
Johnny who?
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, if we're going to mention that, then don't we have to mention the fact that we stole away their run game coordinator?
Well, there's that too. Yeah. We got Waldy, baby.
Yeah.
And that should honestly make a difference for the Seahawks. This is going to be such an interesting division this year because, you know, the teams are all viewed as, you know, nationally as good teams. And there's been a lot of change up and down. There's been a fair amount of drama up and down the division. It's going to be, this is one of the more difficult years to really predict in the NFC West, at least in the last 6 or 7.
Well, with the hype, if the Rams finish 8-9, do you think Sean McVay then is on the hot seat a little bit?
I don't know, because, yeah, well, I would think that Snead would be on the hot seat first because he did give up the farm to get Stafford.
Right.
He gave Goff that horrific contract that, you know, they had to get out from underneath. They gave Gurley that nasty contract as well. I would think it'd be first Snead that is on the hot seat, but you would have to think that McVay's seat is warming up. I think especially it, this has a pretty high probability of happening if the Chargers finish with a better record in LA than the Rams do.
Yeah. So McVay pushes through the media to get Snead fired, and then he hires his boy Peter Schrager to GM the LA Rams.
I don't know. It might take away from their time for their little romantic dates. No,
they'll have all kinds of time together to hang out and.
But they'll have to work.
That's fine. They can just they make their own rules. They can drink vodka Red Bulls all night and work right through the night.
I'm not sure that you want to work with your man crush. I'm not sure that that's a sustainable situation.
Did you see that the Rams hired Andy Benoit to be a special assistant for the Rams?
I had noticed that, and the name rang a bell, and he's a writer, correct?
Yeah. He was the writer, and I wish I had the clip. He was the one who, many years ago, when was it? It wasn't all that long ago. I think it was when Jacoby Brissett was a free agent. And he was talking on like the Monday Morning Quarterback about how, with all things being equal, he would take Jacoby Brissett straight up over Russell Wilson.
Well, with a brain like that in the Rams organization, what could go wrong? I mean, he seems like a really smart guy.
Great hire. Great hire, McVay.
Great hire. You know, these Know Your Rival shows, they're interesting because, look, if we try to like put this out there every year that we wish all these guys the best of their personal lives, and this is all sports hate. Uh-huh. And I'm sure there's people that are going to not get that correct, right? And not realize what we're doing here. But you also have to realize, I mean, this is a Seahawks podcast, and we kind of do genuinely sports hate these people. And so we're going to rip them up and down every way. You're not going to hear anything positive. I mean, short of I get frustrated with construction workers, too. That's the most you're going to get.
And yeah, in terms of objectivity, that's not what we're here for.
I don't even know what that word means.
What do you say we get to the second half of the show?
Sounds like a plan.
Yes, celebratory music to the fanfare to bring us to the second half of the show. And the reason why I play that, Adam, we have surpassed 2 million downloads since we started doing the show.
Holy smokes. That's 2 million terrible decisions people have made, but I appreciate you making them, man.
Just a couple weeks short of our 8-year podiversary, 2 million downloads. A huge thanks to everybody for hanging in with us over these years.
Oh, heck yeah, for sure. It's amazing. And it's amazing to watch the show continue to grow somehow, which is it's still mind blowing. But yeah, big thanks to all you little flockers, man. You guys are the best.
Lots changed over these 8 years. Seattle has a hockey team now. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm.
Heck yeah. I think I'm going to buy myself a Kraken hat. I need a new hat.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know who the players are yet. I know that they made the draft here recently.
Yeah, they picked some guy number two, and he scores goals.
That's good. You need those guys on the team.
Yep, that's about as much as I know about hockey.
You want goal scorers. It's important.
And I think you need one of the big guys to keep it out of the net, too. I've heard those are important, especially one that has a high temperature, because I hear hot goalies are the ones that are the good ones and can win you Stanley Cups. There's your hockey analysis on the Seahawkers football podcast.
Right, we there. Probably won't be starting a Kraken podcast, if you could tell.
I don't know. I actually had thought about it, too. I was like, well, maybe that would be a decent podcast to start because, you know, it's a new team.
Right.
And this is going to be my entry into the NHL and to learn hockey and to enjoy hockey. I figured this is the time. So maybe it's a good podcast to start because there's going to be a lot of other new hockey fans figuring it out with us.
Oh, learning it together rather than being able to educate right from the beginning.
Is that what you think we do on this show?
I mean, we try.
Okay. All right. Maybe it's true.
I haven't gone back to listen to that first year. We weren't clueless about, we had watched football before we started podcasting about football.
It's true. I had watched football from a very young age, so I felt like I had a little bit stronger grasp of how football works, whereas I don't know crap about hockey.
Exactly.
Other than the ice looks really hard to fall on.
You don't want to fall on the ice. No. Skates are sharp.
And fist fights happen.
Yeah.
That part's exciting.
I like that part.
I hope we get a goon. Who's going to be our goon on the Seattle Kraken?
I mean, you're going to know on the show once we find out, because he's probably going to land in Better at Life multiple times.
Either that or we'll have him on the show to give us a little hockey education. Goon style.
Goon education.
Yeah.
What do you say we welcome some new members of the flock?
Yeah. I mean, if that actually happened, I can't believe it.
We've got some. We've got a new executive producer. Let's start off by thanking our current executive producers, DCH, Dustin Monk, and Brian Shaw. And joining them, joining our executive producers, we got $280 from Jake Burdine.
I kind of figured it was going to be Jake. I did. It just felt right, you know? Like, because, I mean, he's invested in the show in all the right ways. You know, just a stellar human being.
Well, he did come in with a note, said, "Hey, guys, I promised to cover your tickets to a game in the 2021 season in a Hawkra-based bid to get fans back in Lumen Field this year. Clearly, the football gods were listening, because 6 months later, the team announced plans to be at full capacity. The plan was to see you guys at a road game, but I am foregoing my usual road warrior status this year because my wife and I are expecting our first future little flocker in early November, and that essentially wipes my fall schedule."
Yay, Mini Burdine!
Yeah! "I'm proud to report the very first baby item we procured was his Russell Wilson onesie."
Heck yeah. See, that's doing it right. Yeah, when my daughter was born, there just wasn't nearly as much merch, you know? Like, you couldn't find some of those things.
Oh, it's all over now.
Oh, yeah.
So Jake goes on to say, "Given that the power of the Hawkra is now a scientific fact, I am not about to tempt fate. I covered your tickets to the Titans game. Go Hawks," from Jake.
Dude, that's awesome. And looking forward to seeing you at the Titans game. I'm doing my work scheduling right now, which is getting a little complex. But there is a sacred weekend in September, and it is the weekend of Titans Seahawks.
Yes, and we still do have, I opened the tickets up to our Ring of Honor members, to our members of the flock at getintheflock.com, and I still have about 10 tickets left. So if anybody wants to join us at the Titans game, they are $140 apiece per ticket, and email us, gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com, and we can take PayPal or Venmo and get you a ticket to the game.
Heck yeah, and you're going to have a great time, man. I mean, there's really fewer events that are more enjoyable for me than when we get to go and hang out with little flockers and see football live again.
Live football at Lumen Field, and we're kicking off the season. Game one in Seattle. Well, it's game two, but it's game one in Seattle.
Yeah. First home game.
So
I
join
waved
us
at the stadium last time I went by. I blew it a kiss.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
Just to let it know that I loved and missed it.
Another executive producer, Kevin Watterson, in at $90 a month at getintheflock.com.
You didn't say we had two new executive producers.
I did too.
Holy crap.
I said we had two.
Oh, maybe I misread it. I don't know. I was driving when I was reading your text, you know, like a good driver.
Right. Well, you didn't respond, but, so that was good.
Yeah. Thanks to Kevin, man. So are we, how many executive producers can we have before we have to have like an Anchorman fight between all of them?
Well, we've got enough for a basketball team now, so that's cool.
Ooh, I bet you we could beat the Space Jam team.
Heck yeah.
And the aliens.
I haven't watched the new one yet.
Why would you? It's not Michael.
It's fine.
It's fine. I mean, that's fine. I mean, LeBron can do what he wants to do. It's just, I mean, when it's just, I don't know. It's just something about when guys like really do just try to be Jordan. And it just bothers me. It's like, you're just not Jordan. And that's okay. You're LeBron. You have your own thing that's highly respectable. You're second greatest player ever. Well, third.
So if a movie studio comes to you and says, we want to do another Space Jam, and you have kind of that reverence for Michael Jordan, you would turn that down?
I'd have to talk to Mike first.
Yeah. Hey, is it cool if I do another Space Jam?
Yeah.
What's Mike going
to
say?
You'd have to get his blessing. You have to ask people when you marry their daughters. you should ask Mike if you can do another Space Jam. It's just courtesy.
Yeah, and you think Mike's going to say no?
Maybe. You don't know with Michael. He could take that as a slight. He could be mad for 3 decades over it.
But you know that he's always going to think that he did the best Space Jam and he did it first. So he's going to have that bragging rights over LeBron anyway.
Sure. Yeah. And I would ride that all the way to the sunset if I were Michael, man.
I don't know why we're talking about Space Jam. We should be reading Kevin's note as a new executive producer.
Absolutely.
Kevin says, big fan of the show. I've been listening for a few years now and wanted to do my part to support what you and Adam are doing. As someone that also works in the arts and entertainment field, I understand and appreciate the support of other creators. I've been a fan of the Seahawks since the first game I attended in the Kingdome as a kid when they were still in the AFC West with Warren Moon under center and Ricky Waters in the backfield. They lost that game, but I was hooked. I now reside in LA, and your show is a breath of fresh air as I'm surrounded by delusional fair-weather fans of the Rams, or as I call them, the Lambs. A few thoughts on the latest episode. I disagree with Adam. The Browns are the real deal. Their head coach and OC previously worked together in Minnesota, and it's clear that they were already on the same page before reuniting in Cleveland. They are off to a good start and have good cohesion. Their defense is very good, as discussed. I think that Clowney will have a bounce back year. He's the Seth Rogen of defensive linemen. Great co-star, but not a leading man. He gained great success with Houston when J.J. Watt took the heat off of him. He hasn't had that same dynamic since. He was looked to as the main guy in Seattle and again in Tennessee, and he was productive, but not in the same way as he was when he had Watt playing next to him. So now, with Myles Garrett on the other side of the D-line, I expect him to have a big year. Also, I'm interested to see how their offense plays out this season with a healthy OBJ. No one talks about that fact that after OBJ got hurt last year, the offense took off. I believe the OC and Baker were forcing the ball to OBJ, and the moment he was out, seemed like Baker opened up the offense, spread the ball around, and had more success. There's more, but do you want to react to... He's moving on to other teams, so with regard to the Browns...
We'll go with Browns here first. And I can't hardly argue with Kevin when he makes a strong Seth Rogen comparison. Like, that was well played, and not a lot of wiggle room for me to get out.
Jadeveon Rogan.
Yeah, but the thing with Seth Rogen is that when he is a co-star in movies, he doesn't get hurt halfway through the movie and is unable to finish. There's that. Now, the OBJ factor, I mean, he is correct about that the offense looked a little better once Odell was out. But Odell's going to be back, and him and Baker just have terrible chemistry. They've had terrible chemistry from the word jump.
Yeah, I wonder how that's... Now that they have had that offseason, though, to hopefully develop kind of that cohesion between quarterback and wide receiver, I think that'll help.
How are they going to do that with him coming off the ACL?
Is he not playing in the preseason?
I don't know. He might, I guess.
Yeah.
But you don't have that whole offseason. They didn't play catch on the beach like Russell does with like DK.
Yeah, that's going to do it. It's the throwing footballs on the beach.
It might be. You don't know.
I think that there is a good case to be made for the Browns. And I do wonder, the biggest question is going to be OBJ and how he factors back in, and if, you know, they'll go back to trying to force it to him, or if they'll kind of take that approach of taking what they can get now that they had that experience last year.
The Browns are the team version of Matt Stafford to me. Like, so a lot of the folks that don't agree with me about Stafford, they're like, yeah, sure, you keep telling me he's great, but like, I need to see him do something, mm-hmm. You know, because he's Matt Stafford. That's how I feel about the Browns. As long as they're the Cleveland Browns, like until they really actually do something, like then I don't care.
And I think that Baker, I don't know if I can see him as being a top guy like, you know, Mahomes and Josh Allen. I mean, those guys are the established AFC quarterbacks that I look at as the top guys. I think Tannehill's even a better quarterback than Baker.
He's the worst quarterback in his division.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather have him than Ben right now.
Would you?
Yeah.
For sure?
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe. Okay. I mean, it's close though. Cause it's Lamar and then Burrow and then washed up Ben Roethlisberger, which is borderline better or worse than Baker.
And it's pretty bad when you're behind Burrow, who played, a few games last year before he went out.
But Burrow's really good.
I know.
And that's it. That's the other thing that's going to be tough for Baker going forward throughout the rest of his career. I mean, think about how much new quarterback talent has entered the league just since he came into the league. I mean, he's going to be fighting an uphill battle his entire life.
Well, we're moving on in the note, and now we're moving to LA teams. And Kevin brings up the Rams. So fits right in with the theme of the show. Says, I believe that Stafford is a big upgrade from Goff in LA. Stafford is consistent and makes big time throws on a regular basis. He was just playing for a crummy franchise his whole career. It will be interesting to see how he does in LA. I will say their offense took a big hit with the loss of Cam Akers. He was really coming on last year. There are a few big name running backs still on the market, but I don't see them bringing back Todd Gurley. I could see them kicking the tires on Le'Veon Bell, though we'll see if he has anything left.
Yeah, I agree with Kevin on all sorts of things here. I mean, obviously he and I are simpatico when it comes to Stafford. The idea that, you know, Akers going down does leave them a hole in their depth chart. There's no doubt about it. Now, I can't see him bringing Gurley back. Maybe Le'Veon. Isn't that one of the more intriguing career arcs over the past 3-4 years in Bell? Like Gurley, he went downhill because his knee was all jacked up,
right?
Like what's it, is it just his attitude? Like how does somebody go from where he was to where he is now, taking shots at Andy Reid who picked him off the scrap heap?
Yeah, if nobody saw that, the just after the Super Bowl, well, just this offseason, yeah, he said something about not wanting to play for Andy Reid ever. And yeah, just did not. Who says bad things about Andy Reid? It's the weirdest thing.
It is the weirdest thing. I mean, he couldn't get along with Tomlin, who is known as a player's coach. Like his players seem to genuinely love him, unless you're
catfish
crazy. And now he's taking shots at Andy Reid, who's one of the most lovable coaches in the league. Like he's so well regarded. He basically has a Tony Dungy type reputation in terms of likability in the NFL.
Maybe he just needs, I don't know.
Does he need a Belichick?
Maybe, but he wouldn't go to a Belichick. I doubt.
No. And yeah, he takes shots at Andy Reid, but like not as many shots at Adam Gase as he should have.
And for as much of a well-loved coach that Andy Reid is, how many coaches are then willing to bring on Le'Veon Bell after taking a shot at Reid?
Especially with his productivity where it's at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're in rough shape as far as finding, but in terms of a spot where you can find a guy, like we were saying before, if you have an offensive line that's working, and Henderson's pretty decent. If he can be healthy this year, I think they could be okay.
It could be okay. I think the best back that was available there, you know, in that second tier of free agents was Melvin Gordon. And I can't remember where he ended up going. But
Gordon's with the Broncos.
No, they let him go this year.
Yeah, he signed a 2-year deal with the Broncos. So he's coming back this year.
Oh, who am I thinking of then? Darn it. Well, I screwed up. Never mind.
Melvin Ingram?
Yes, Melvin Ingram. God, I get my Melvins confused.
Maybe he could be a good running back. You don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, speaking of the Chargers, he also goes on to say, I expect that Herbert continues to take steps forward with the Chargers. Chargers defense is really what struggled last season. Herbert took the Chargers into 5 fourth quarter leads last season, and the defense struggled to hold those leads, and they ultimately lost. Look to Herbert to continue playing at a high level. Their success will be contingent upon their defense playing better.
That's an interesting analysis there from Kevin, because when I look at Herbert, I mean, I was very dubious of him coming into the league, and he obviously had a big year last year. I can't deny that. But that's got a big, let's put a pin in it. Like, I got to see it again for another year, man. Like, after the league's had a little bit to sit and figure him out, a new head coach. Yeah, I'm not nearly as bullish on Herbert as Kevin is, but, you know, he's the executive producer. He's probably right.
Well, moving on to the Cowboys, I believe Dak is grossly overrated and Jerry Jones just screwed the franchise by giving him that monster contract. Dak may be high on PFF lists, but Dak has only won one playoff game in his career, yet they pay him like a Super Bowl winning quarterback. We will have to see, but Ezekiel Elliott may be past his prime and they don't have the O-line that they had a few seasons ago. So without the offensive line he once had and a productive running game, how do they expect to get big plays out of Amari Cooper? My hot take is that Washington not only wins that division, but they will win one playoff game as well this season.
So Kevin kind of has a similar opinion of what you hear a lot in talking head circles a little bit. Like, there's a lot of people that are super bullish on the Washington football team, and it's hard not to be with the beard there, right? Like, you just naturally want to root for him.
I think that's part of it. I think you want to root.
There's no doubt about it. And their defense is legit. There's no doubt about that, too. I think we can safely say that the Giants will be a dumpster fire once again. Daniel Jones is definitely going to crumble under the pressure of this upcoming year. Saquon, common enough of injury there. The Eagles, their lackluster head coach in Syrian Army. I don't see him turning that around down there. So Dak coming back off of a major injury, it's going to take him at least half a season to feel confident in that. And they did have a explosive offense last year by the numbers, playing in the worst division of football. But Kevin's totally right. I mean, Dak's one of those guys, like, he's right around the Dalton line, right? I mean, he's pretty good in, you know, who you got that's better, unless you're a handful of teams. But I can't give him that kind of contract. I just can't. Even though he's a hell of a dude, he's a great person.
I would take Dak over Stafford.
Yes. Yeah. Durability.
Yeah.
Mainly durability. And then, I mean, you hear the reports, and these are the same offseason reports that you hear every year, but Zeke's in the best shape of his life. He's yoked up.
That's the thing that I worry about, though, with that offensive line and Dak being able to stay upright. I like Washington too for that division, but
you could flip a coin for me with those, but I would probably, gun to my head, choose the Cowboys, even though McCarthy is less than adequate as coach.
It was interesting to hear Adam talking as if Jameis Winston is the lock for the starting job in New Orleans. He was the number 3 QB on the depth chart last season behind Taysom Hill, who New Orleans just backed up the Brinks truck to and gave a monster contract. As of now, I expect Taysom to be the starter week 1.
But what about the LASIK surgery? He can see now.
That's right.
He can see the W's that he's about to eat. I don't know. It's hard to say.
That's a training camp battle that I'm curious to see.
Well, so the contract that they gave Taysom Hill, like, that has all sorts of outs, right? I mean, it's one of those
weird contract. Yeah.
And
but it is still, he's still going to make more than Winston this year.
Right. And can a guy that is a playmaker make more money than Winston and not be the starting quarterback? Sure. I mean, I don't know that Sean Payton, the better Sean, is going to want to take that explosive X factor that is Taysom Hill out of his offense in terms of being that, you know, chess piece that he can move all over the board and do all the different things with. I don't know. I guess I just feel like it's going to be Winston, and I don't have any good reason for that. I don't.
I think in terms of arm talent, that's why you go Winston.
He's clearly the better thrower of the football, just based on arm talent, like you said.
Yeah, we got to use the buzzword, Arm talent. Yeah.
Arm talent. But the decision making is still very dubious until I see otherwise. So,
yeah. Closing this out, I could talk Seattle forever. One area I hope to see them improve is on special teams. I'm thinking they will use either Dwayne Eskridge or Trey Brown in the return game, the same as they did Lockett at the start of his career. It's been at least 2 years, if I'm remembering correctly, since Seattle returned a kick or a punt for a touchdown. Hopefully, they will also address their kick coverage as well. Seattle gave up a lot of yards on kicks last year, and with a defense that struggled and started slow last season, that was a real killer when they gave the opposing team such great starting field position. Sorry for the long note. I get started talking football and can just go on forever. I really enjoy the NFL. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Kevin. And yeah, stay well down there in LA. I'm so sorry you're stuck there. But as far as the special teams is concerned, they did take a step forward a little bit last year. They were better than the year previous. And the kicking game itself with our kickers, they're very good.
Man, I just think back to the first half of last season, and as on point as Dixon was in the punting game to start the year last year, if the defense can be a little bit better, like that could be huge. There was just so many times where I felt like Dixon would punt it down to the 5 yard line, and then the defense would give up a 95 yard drive.
Absolutely, especially that first half of the season. I think Kevin does have a great point regarding the return game. It hasn't been very explosive for the last couple of years. And I think he hit the nail on the head, kind of pigeonholing Eskridge in as a returner. He has dynamic ability that way. I also think that this team feels a lot deeper this year with guys that can play kick coverage and things like that, guys that are a little further down on the depth chart. And I do expect to see a little better performance there.
Well, closing this off with a couple new members of the flock. We've got Hugh Matsubayashi, who came in at $1 a month. So welcome to the flock to Hugh.
Heck yeah. I say welcome to the flock to Hugh as well, and not his last name, because there's no way I'm ever getting that right.
Matsubayashi.
I'm sorry, buddy. Huh? That, you're good at it. There's no way for me.
I don't know if I nailed it or not, but I feel like if I go with it, it'll sound like I know what I'm doing.
Look, yeah, exactly. Now you have my entire theory to doing this podcast. If you say it with enough conviction, it sounds true.
Corbin Pester is in at $3 a month, and Corbin is going to be joining us at the game for the Titans. So welcome to the flock to Corbin. And yeah, thanks for being a member of the flock. Looking forward to seeing you at the Titans game.
Dad, that's going to be awesome, man. Definitely looking forward to meeting you, Corbin, and welcome to the family.
And Andrew Venegas is in at $12 for the year. So welcome to the flock to Andrew.
Hey, heck yeah, man. That one-time donation, you know, the yearly, that's super helpful as well. So yeah, appreciate it, Andrew. You're the man.
Well, we'll close this off with an email from Michael in Hamburg, Deutschland. Michael says, hey guys, last year you were searching for a name to refer to the catfishing Rams, Cardinals, and 49ers together. I had an idea back then, but forgot to write. Well, now maybe because there is nothing else going on. I remembered. Adam once referred to a group as those jokers. So that's my suggestion. Call them those jokers. Suits them fine. Thanks for being with me in June, from Michael.
I like that. I mean, because all those jokers kind of like rolls off the tongue. You can say you those jokers. You can say it with like some disdain. It can drips right out of the word.
Whereas for Raka, it sounds a little cooler, whereas those jokers, it's, yeah.
Well, it's a little more original for Raka. I'm not sure that it was the best acronym ever invented, but I mean, given what we had to deal with, dealing with the team names from those other jokers is about the best that we could do.
It's the best we could do.
I think maybe we could use them interchangeably. The for Raka jokers.
We'll go back and forth. We'll see what sticks.
Okay. I dropped a Farrak earlier in the episode.
I know. I feel like that's the one that stuck, and that's what we've had to go with. But if this takes over, that's fine too.
Yeah, whichever one brings up the proper level of sports hate in your gut is the right one for you.
On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. Who you got for do better?
My do better this week, I've got to go with Mike Florio, because I feel like, gosh, Florio always lands in do better. But one of the things that he likes to do is flex on all the reasons that a player should, all the reasons why a player should have an agent when it comes to contract negotiations. So, you know, whenever there's something that's come up with a player trying to renegotiate his deal, like Bobby Wagner did, like Sherman did, you know, Russell Okung, he's always pointing out the fact that, oh, this is a time where you would really want to have an agent. Well, he took maybe the most inappropriate time to point this out a couple weeks back, and that was in the Richard Sherman situation when the arrest came out. And so from Pro Football Talk on Twitter, tweets out, says, when a player gets arrested, he usually calls his agent, who immediately drops everything in order to do whatever has to be done to get the player out on bail at no extra charge. So here's Florio spiking the ball on Richard Sherman in one of the most just worst possible moments. You know, way to go, Florio. You know, there's nothing like flexing on a person going through what might be one of the worst moments in their life just to try and make your point about when you need an agent. So to Mike Florio, do better.
Do better. Yeah. How uncouth. Like, that's a terrible, terrible look for Mike Florio. And it does show, like, he does love him some agent talk and how important agents are. And it's because he's a slimy lawyer himself. Like, that's totally why. He's just trying to, you know, protect the rest of his slimy brethren.
And it's fine to feel that way. I, you know what? I don't have any problem with him saying the important reasons of why you need an agent. But there's a time and a place to where maybe that's not the best time. When a guy is in jail, you know, like I said, one of the worst moments of his life. And you're like, well, if he had an agent right now, he'd be working to get him out of jail.
Well, geez, and what does he expect an agent's job to be? I mean, and not only that, can you not have a different bail guy? Like, you know, everybody's got somebody in their crew that they know that they can call for bail money.
That's not the most important reason to have an agent.
No. Do you think Sherman couldn't have called Cam from jail and been like, bro, can you bail me out? And Cam would have been like, no, twist in the wind.
He has to have a lawyer anyway, I'm sure. So yeah. Why does it matter if it's his agent?
They could probably figure out how to bail somebody out. Bailing somebody out isn't something that you need a law degree to figure out or be a, you know, professional agent to figure out. Any ordinary citizen can bail out somebody. It's totally doable.
I don't know. That's what an idiot. It was a weird. It was a weird moment of flexing for Florio that I just thought came at a poor time.
All right, Brandon. Well, my do better this week is for the lack of barbecue in my life. Driving back from Everett doing a job this last weekend, I stopped in Kellogg, Idaho, and I thought for sure I was guaranteed to get myself some barbecue while I was there. So I had something to take to my campsite that night and not eat the leftover McDonald's chicken sandwiches that were in my bag that were a day old. And much to my chagrin, Garrett Taylor, our beautiful little flocker and friend, he was not open to feed me barbecue the instant that I wanted
no.
it. And it's all his fault. I'm so upset about it. How dare he take a day off? I had to eat leftover McDonald's. Garen, do better. I don't really mean it. That felt like, you know, it's off season. You can have fun with these things.
Yeah. There's something to that. Like, he has made the invitation over and over. Do not drive past without stopping so you can get yourself some barbecue.
Yeah.
And then so you stop and he's not even there.
Well, and the thing is that the name's misleading. I was guaranteed to get barbecue, you know, like imagine my dismay. But, I'm not in the food service industry. I don't own a restaurant or a food truck or anything like that. But it seems to me that during the summertime, Saturday and Sunday, man, that's when you would clean up right there along the interstate. Big travel day. You need to be open on Sunday, man. Now,
take Tuesday and Wednesday off, Garen.
If it had been during the season and it was Sunday and he was closed, totally understand. You take game day off.
Oh, yeah.
That I get.
Yeah.
Like I said, I don't really mean it. I needed something.
Got to give him a hard time.
Yeah.
Moving on to Better at Life. My Better at Life is for the CDC. and a nice little advertising campaign that they put out recently. And with the Olympics going on, I feel like it ties right in to, because now I can't watch swimming without thinking about this advertisement from the CDC. They put it out on Twitter. Don't swim or let your kids swim if sick with diarrhea. One person with diarrhea can contaminate the entire pool. Learn more ways to keep you and those you care about healthy. And not only did they have this PSA, Adam, there's this nice little GIF that when you hit the play button, it's a kid sliding down the slide and leaving a brown streak as she's sliding down the slide.
Yeah.
It says it only takes one person with diarrhea to contaminate the entire pool. For the CDC putting out messages like this, better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, it's funny. I mean, this is a place where the CDC like nails it, right? Like they've had some struggles giving the right advice at the right time, like over the past year or so, and can't seem to figure out what their messaging is. This is strong. Like you don't want to be a slide brown streaker. You don't. That's bad for everybody's deal.
It's a campaign like that, that it sticks with you.
Yeah. So what we can take away from this is that the CDC, with a dealing with a problem, a long time problem that has affected this country, like diarrhea in the pool, they've got that on lockdown. But any new problem that they're presented with, they get all flustered, confused, and have conflicting messages all the time.
When you've had as much experience with diarrhea over the years, you know how to really dial in on the proper type of messaging.
How many pools full of diarrhea happen a year in the U.S., do you think? Did the CDC provide that statistic? Is it 100 or less? Is it 10,000?
Do you think there's someone at every city pool tracking diarrhea streaks as the kids are going down the slides?
Right.
That's how you'd have to come up with the data.
Does this beg the question, or at least kind of bring up the argument that maybe you should be swimming in a river rather than a pool? Because we all know catfish flows down river. So like, you know, as long as you're upriver from whoever's got the diarrhea that day, you're good. But in the pool, you're just in a cesspool now.
Always be upstream in the river.
Yeah.
There's your tip of the day.
Maybe that's where the phrase "you're up catfish creek without a paddle" comes from. I don't know.
I don't think so.
No, that's not where that came from.
It's not Diarrhea Creek.
There is literally a creek in Montana called Bloody Dick Creek.
Is there really?
Yeah. Don't swim in there.
I would avoid that.
Yeah. I kind of want to know how that name came about, but I kind of don't.
I kind of have a thought.
You got some ideas.
Who's your better at life?
All right. My better at life this week, again, because I'm searching, is for a moose, Mama Moose. That's what I called her. I camped along the banks of the Clark Fork after getting disappointed by my lack of barbecue in my life, and was sitting along the side of the river and right in the gloaming when like the sun's kind of down and you just can kind of see silhouettes in the sky reflecting off the river. About a quarter mile out, saw something like swimming across the river and it was big. I was like, what the hell is that? And comes up onto a rock bar and it's like, oh, that's a moose. You know, you can kind of see the outline. And it was just cool to sit and relax in nature and watch this moose walk up the river all the way up until it got within about 20 feet of me. And that's when I was like, oh no, this could go sideways. Cause moose, you know, notoriously don't have the greatest of tempers. And so I just kind of gently said, hey mama, I'm right here. I was like standing, like waved my hand. She looked up, kind of gave me the up nod. We talked for a second. She went out back across the other side of the river. And it was just this really serene moment that kind of, over these last couple of weeks, I've had a lot going on that kind of just tied me back to just nature and feeling like, you know, these are the things that are important, having time to enjoy things like that. And so for Mama Moose, for making my night better at life than Skip Bayless.
100% cooler than Skip Bayless.
100%.
It's always good when you can have a good moose encounter. You don't want to have a bad moose encounter.
No, I've been very lucky. All my moose encounters have been positive, except for when they chew on my fruit trees. And then I get mad. But other than that, I'm pro moose.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.